Thank you, Your Honor. Tim Bechtold on behalf of the Finnegan Estate. I think, Your Honor, one undisputed fact controls that case, and that is that the railroad right-of-way that crosses the Finnegan property is part of a 20-mile segment of a right-of-way that was abandoned in total in 1958. I think that this fact alone provides two ways to grant relief that requested by the state and put an end once and for all to any possible claim by the government on the estate's land. First, under Section 912, I think the court can simply confirm the uncontested abandonment of the estate's property and the government's claim. The 1988 Rails to Trails Act that the government relies on doesn't preclude that result for several reasons. First, it's because the 1988 Rails to Trails Act, Congress spoke prospectively only about abandonments. They said commencing from October 4th of 1988. And obviously, that doesn't include an abandonment that undisputedly occurred in 1958.
But counsel, it depends on whether abandonment means only physical abandonment or whether it also requires a decree of abandonment. And that seems to me to be a pivotal analytical question for us. And given the earlier legislation and the fact that in general adverse possession doesn't lie against the government, so perhaps the reverse is true too, that there has to be some judicial imprimatur on the government for its part taking advantage of abandonment. Isn't that sort of the first question? What does it mean?
It is, Your Honor, and that's why I think the court in both Avista and View described abandonment as the actual process of the railroad no longer using the link. And so, and both Avista and...
That's ineffective, isn't it? I mean, that's the problem, is that that may be legally ineffective. It's sort of like saying that divorce means somebody leaving the marital home and going to live somewhere else. That's a... you know, physical divorce, but it isn't effective legally until there's a judicial decree. And it appears to me that the district court's analysis along those similar lines is persuasive. And I'd like your response to that.
Well, you know, the district court in the King County addressed that and said, you know, This segment of trail had been abandoned, but there's no time limit for the judicial decree. So that in the so when we look at that situation, I think is completely analogous to what we have here. The King County Court said, look, this stretch of rail was abandoned, and you know there's no judicial decree, but there's no time limit on it either. So as long as it's been abandoned, then the time limit to getting the judicial decree doesn't matter. And even if that occurs after 1988. So the district court didn't even address the King County Court decision at all.
Stop there for a second. And I'm not sure that I really follow that. It may well be true that prior to the enactment of the 1988 Act, there was no time limit. It's as if the government, which was the original owner of the land, had given rights to the railroad company, but they weren't peaceful rights. In 1922 said, well, if it's abandoned, but not making it simply physical abandonment, adding something that required a decree or declaration by Congress or a court, We'll let the adjoining landowner take the property. And then in 1988 said, well, that's we're taking a different direction now. And I'm not sure why we should assume that the 1988 Act leaves on offer to the adjoining landowner, if and when he gets around to it, to reach out and claim title to this property. If the landowner hadn't done anything in the preceding 66 years, I'm not sure why the government should be assumed to be leaving that offer on the table, even as it's changed its policy direction. why do you say the 1988 Act didn't pull back whatever offer might have been on the table before?
Well, because it, first of all, it didn't overrule Section 912. It left it standing, and had it intended to overrule 912, it certainly could have invalidated that law, but it didn't. And furthermore, I mean, well, the
912 still had useful life because it still had the 1 year after decree time for a public highway. So sure. If somebody had done something immediately before the enactment of the 1988 Act, the federal government wasn't looking to extinguish that. Indeed, the public highway part persisted. So I'm not sure the failure to repeal 912 really answers the question as to why Congress would have intended that offer to remain on the table forever.
Well, that is, it certainly, it says commencing after October 4th of 1988 for abandonments. And so it's like those, when railroads stopped using their grade after 1988, then the Rails to Trails Act would apply. But it doesn't say that for those, I mean, it does not address those situations that the court is looking at right now. And similarly, when this court in Avista saw the situation, it said, well, I'm going to send this back to, or we're going to send this back to the district court and determine whether 912 applies to declarations of abandonment issued after the effective date of the Rails to Trails Act. So that's at Avista 1251 note 12. But so this is a situation that the Ninth Circuit had asked the district court to determine on remand in Avista, but because of the procedural developments later in Avista, the district court never got there. But even so, even if the court decides that abandonment is some sort of unified whole and is not a two-point process like the King County Court found, then the court can still give this, can grant the Finnegans their land simply by saying that this was one unified abandonment and the Bennett Court, for one, is the judicial determination, and that happened before the 1988 Rails to Trails Act. So
but that didn't include this parcel, correct?
The Bennett decision said for the right of way. It didn't specify any one particular parcel.
But there was a specific parcel at issue.
There certainly was. And so
how could it be adjudicating more than the parcel that was at issue?
Well, I think it adjudicated the right of way that had been abandoned, and that's what the Bennett decision said, is that it adjudicated that this right of way is abandoned. So it didn't specify only for that particular parcel. So it was a court of competent jurisdiction over that area.
How did the court have jurisdiction over more than the actual parcel that was in front of it? Let's suppose this was a 300 mile stretch and there was a, you know, 1 acre parcel. The court could say, well, the entire thing has been abandoned, so this 1 acre for sure, I'm declaring, you know, it's abandoned. But I don't understand how that extends to a declaration with respect to parties that aren't before the court.
You know, that was a situation that actually came up in the King County case where they said this court only has jurisdiction over in this county. And I think the same thing happens here. But this is a situation where it is a small stretch and that court had jurisdiction over the whole stretch of it. So
how do you say the court had jurisdiction theoretically if there was an action involving another parcel within the county, perhaps? But I look at your brief's quotation of the complaint from Bennett, and it makes specific reference, said land being the legal description of Bennett's real property. On its face, that action doesn't seem to speak directly to any property other than Mr. Bennett's.
I guess then what we're asking the court to consider is that it makes sense that the abandonment would be for one unified whole, and that have the unified whole, it is that's why the Bennett one is the one that precedes the 1988 Act. But similarly, there was an adjudication for this parcel specifically in 1996. So when the Finnegan estate, and I think that what the government argues is, well, the government wasn't a party to that. It wasn't, and that it wasn't notified. But regardless, there was a court of adequate jurisdiction who adjudicated this abandonment and said in 1996 that it applied.
Well, can we apply the effect of that court determination to a party that should have been included but was not included in that determination? I mean, by 96, it's after the enactment of the 88 Act, and the 88 Act makes a point of saying lands within a national forest, which this apparently is, passed to the national forest. So it seems pretty clear by 1996, the U.S. government is an interested party, but it's not named, given notice, or given an opportunity to speak. So I'm not sure how that court determination can count for anything.
Well, you know, Your Honor, as the magistrate judge noted in this case, at the time, the state of the law at that time under view was that what the judge and lawyers did in the case of, in the Finnegan estate was adequate at the time. And of course,
view says requires a two-step process. Physical abandonment isn't the end of the story. So I'm not sure I follow how view supports the proposition the United States wasn't an interested party.
Well, the parties that that were aware that the county was aware of and that the railroads were aware of did not include the United States at the time.
But that really doesn't speak to the problem, though, which is, okay, they were well-intended. I'm not saying they were malicious about it, but if the United States wasn't a party to the proceeding, I'm not sure how we can say today that counts as an adjudication that ought to extinguish the interest of the United States. I mean, give me a logical reason why it should.
Well, Your Honor, in either situation, there's no way that they could have had they couldn't have had the abandonment confirmed without the abandonment of the entire 20-mile segment being confirmed. And Your Honor, at this time, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You certainly may do that. And we will now hear from Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, AUSA Mark Smith on behalf of the Forest Service. Your Honors, the District Court properly granted the United States summary judgment in this case, and this court should affirm. As Judge Clifton was suggesting in his comments, the history matters here, and having a sense of the sequence of things that unfolded here is important because it helps us to understand exactly what Congress was up to with the acts that we're talking about, the statutes that we're talking about. In 1864, they granted this right-of-way to Northern Pacific. According to the Townsend case in 1903, the Supreme Court said that was a limited fee with the right of river going to the United States. So as long as that right-of-way was being used for railroad purposes, it was Northern Pacific's to use. When railroad purposes stopped, it went back to the United States.
But could I just ask you a question about that? Did it go back automatically to the United States when the railroad stopped using it, or did there have to be a decree?
So, Your Honor, I would say that depends on which authorities you're consulting. The 1864 Act itself and the Townsend case suggest that mere cessation of use as a railroad reverts the right of way to the United States.
Just automatically. Some courts. Are you saying that Townsend is overruled? So there's no longer an automatic reverter?
No, ma'am. I think it's a question of
interpretation. Good law. Is Townsend still good law?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So at the point of non-use, it automatically reverts, the property automatically reverts to the government.
That's what the original granting language indicates, and that's what the Townsend Court stated. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Your Honor. So in 1922, Congress passes the Abandoned Railroad Act in Section 912, and this allows adjoining landowners to acquire the United States reversionary interests if they just go into court and get a decree confirming the railroad's physical abandonment.
At that point, the property belongs to the government. because the railway has stopped using it, and then there's an automatic reverter to the government, and then the estate, the landowner can go in and ask for a decree. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the language in 912, the plain language there states that the reversion can go from the United States to the landowner. So at some point, it goes from the railroad to the United States.
About a transfer. So under Townsend, I guess, the land would automatically go to the United States upon physical abandonment by the railroad. And then if there's a decree, it's transferred to the property owner, correct?
Yes, ma'am. That's
okay,
correct.
Okay, thank you.
So in this case, the railroad pulled up its tracks at some point in the 1950s or the 1960s, and Glaudina Finnegan and her predecessors had an opportunity from that point until 1988 to go into court and get judicial confirmation. They slept on their rights. They never actually went in there and got that decree. In 1988, Congress enacts the Trails Act, and they do this because they realize the mileage of railroad rights of way available is rapidly diminishing. And they understand now that this is an important asset in terms of recreational opportunities and in terms of possibly reactivating these rail lines in the future. So at that point, they change the dynamic. The reverter goes states with the United States, right, according to the Trails
Act. So at the point of physical abandonment, it reverts to the United States, and then it remains in the United States. But the reverter to the United States happens at the point of physical abandonment. Is that correct?
I believe that's the interpretation that flows from Townsend and from the 1864 Act, Your Honor, yes.
So then what is it, your argument then would be, so we said in Avista that under 1248C, the railroad rights of way abandoned after October 4th, 1988, reverted to the United States. That was our holding in Avista. So the reversion to the United States happens at the point of physical abandonment. So you need us to reinterpret that to mean they don't revert to the United States. They've already reverted to the United States, but then it remains in the United States. Is that your argument?
I think so, Your Honor. So Section 1248 says
so
shall remain.
Our interpretation in Avista was incorrect. Our statement in Avista was incorrect.
I'm sorry, which statement in Avista are we referring to now, Your Honor?
On footnote 2, we say, under 1248C, railroad rights of way abandoned after October 4th revert to the United States. You wouldn't be able to accept that because they obviously revert to the United States at the point of physical abandonment. So you would have to disagree with that statement.
I would interpret that statement as meaning contrary to the effect of Section 912, right? The reversionary interest reverts to the United States.
At the point of physical abandonment, I think we already agreed that that's what Townsend says.
Yeah, so we are amending Section 912 in terms of where the reversionary interest goes, right? So it's affecting an alteration in the operation of that statute.
Well, I thought
right?
just Under- it reverts, the reversionary interest goes immediately to the United States. And then under 912, it's transferred to the landowner if there's a decree. And 1248, it just stays with the United States, correct?
Right. Right. And so it's basically envisaging a couple of different scenarios here. One where the landowner goes in and confirms abandonment and one where they do not. So there's definitely some difficulty in terms of the semantics involved here.
But they're contrary to that language. I also had a question in 1248C, where the public highway exception, they refer to a determination of abandonment. So if abandonment means abandoned plus a decree, why isn't that redundant? I know you tried to explain it in your brief, but I didn't quite understand the explanation. Could you go through that?
In terms of the highway exception as stated in 1248 or as stated in 912, Your Honor?
Well, we're construing what 1248C requires. And so we have to figure out what the word abandonment means. And you argue in your brief it means that there's a decree. Abandonment means abandonment plus it's been decreed. But then later on, Congress refers specifically to a determination of abandonment. So if abandonment means abandonment plus a decree, physical abandonment plus a decree, then you would have determination of a physical abandonment plus a decree. So it would be redundant. So I didn't understand your explanation in the brief as to why Congress would say determination of abandonment and abandonment to mean the same thing in just a very short statutory section.
So the Section 1248C sits on top of Section 912 here, right? It's amending those terms. So you
it's
have
not,
to...
It's not amending, right? It's it refers to, cross-references 912, and then it sets a new... it doesn't overrule 912. So it's hard to say it amends 912. But it cross-references 912.
Yeah, I'm relying on the court's verbiage in cases like S.C. Johnson, you know, where they basically said Section 1248C is an amendment of the reversionary interest in 912.
It's not written that way, correct? It's not actually an amendment, is it?
I don't know if it's denominated as such, Your Honor. By explicit reference to that statutory section in the terms of 1248C, it's amending where the reversionary interest goes. So I think there can be little question about the effect of 1248C. In terms of the fact that it states a determination of abandonment or forfeiture, I don't think that's necessarily redundant to the term upon the abandonment. It's just reinforcing the same concept.
How can that be, though? I mean, if abandonment already includes the concept of a decree, you wouldn't need a determination of a decree, right?
Well, I think that's correct. The short answer to your question is yes. I think probably it's helps to refute plaintiff's position in this case that they use that term twice in here, Your Honor. To the contrary of plaintiff's interpretation that Congress had this intent to convert what was universally understood in Section 912 to be a two-part definition into a one-part definition, it makes more sense here that when they say determination and when they say abandonment, it's they're using the same principle as articulated in Section 912, which is physical
counsel,
abandonment.
There seems to be another way to look at it as well, which is that... It sort of confirms your original statement that the United States has a reversionary interest the moment there's a physical abandonment, so that if you read them as being two distinct things, the first half of that sentence in subsection C means that the United States has and retains the title to the property as soon as it is physically abandoned, unless there is this judicial determination, which in the earlier act meant a neighbor and now means something different. So I'm not sure why that isn't the best reading of that sentence. I may be wrong about that, but yeah. I appreciate your looking at it and telling me what your thought is on that.
I think that is the appropriate interpretation, Your Honor, and I say that based upon the fact that it's most consistent with the purpose that Congress had in enacting the Trails Act here.
So when does the abandonment have to take place? I mean, the language says commencing October 4th, 1988 upon the abandonment. So does the abandonment have to take place after 1988 or before 1988?
Given the way that courts were defining abandonment in Section 912, abandonment has to include confirmation. So if a confirmation occurs after 1988.
So just looking at 1248C, it says commencing October 4, 1988 upon the abandonment. So what is in the United States? So the abandonment doesn't happen until after the decree, and then what does the United States hold before that time? Nothing? Does it stay in the railroad?
No, the United States, so title remains in the United States. As I said, you know, Section 1248 sunsetted the provision in 912 that allowed for the reversionary interest to be reallocated to the neighboring landowner. And so, you know, this is consistent with the congressional intent. If you look at the pre-salt case.
It seems to me, again, you're making this more complicated than it needs to be. The law was that upon physical abandonment, title revested in the United States. And what this says is it remains with the United States. It doesn't say it starts up again. It just says it remains there unless this new procedure is followed after 1988. It seems like that it's being made more complicated than it needs to be, and I may be oversimplifying it.
No, I agree with your interpretation, Your Honor. I do, 100%.
You're willing to take that suggestion.
Either there's two types of abandonment or there isn't. Either there's an abandonment when there's a physical abandonment and it goes to the United States, or there's abandonment only when there's a decree, in which case it goes to the property owner. And the question we're looking at in 1248C is, what sort of abandonment are we talking about, and when does it have to happen? So if it's physical abandonment, then 1248C only applies if the physical abandonment happens after October 1988. If it's the sort of abandonment that you have with the decree, then what does the United States have during those 66 years? Apparently nothing. Or we have to say, well, Congress didn't know what it was talking about and used the word in two very different ways. So I'm a little confused about how we're supposed to interpret 1248C consistently with Townsend.
Well, I think if there's a decree between 1922 and 1988, then it goes to the adjoining. Oh, no. Can you still hear me?
Yes, we can.
Then it goes to the adjoining landowner. Sorry about that. My computer just went to sleep. If however 1988 comes and goes and they have not secured judicial confirmation, then there is no possibility for the adjoining landowner to obtain the reversionary interest.
It'd be nice if Congress had put that into the statute, but I understand your position.
Thank you, counsel.
Is my time expired? I'm sorry. I don't have a clock in front of me.
Your time has expired.
All right, thank you, Your Honor.
I think we understand your position. Mr. Bechtold, you have a bit of rebuttal time remaining.
Your Honor, first of all, I'd like to take the opportunity to address Judge Clifton's question about the meaning of Bennett here. So I think what 1988 says is the federal interest in the right-of-way become the property of any adjacent landowner whose own title is based on the federal conveyance through which the right-of-way passed. That's from that Senate report. But so Avista treats abandonment and confirmation as two separate items. So they could treat abandonment as the end of use and confirmation as the process used to require a vest transfer to the private owner's interests. So 1248 doesn't sit on top of 912. They sit side by side. Both contain the public highway exception. So it's not like 1248 needed 912 to keep the public highway exception. They both contain it. So since this court has treated abandonment as essentially a two-step process in Avista, and the thing about Avista is that there was basically all the parties agreed that there had been no prior judicial determination, and so it wasn't even before them. And that's why on remand, Avista said, you know, figure out what's going on here with you know, when there's a confirmation. To say that it's not a two-part process is basically to say that what the district court in the Western Washington district was simply incorrect when they decided the King County case.
We're not bound by that opinion. We may disagree with it, correct?
You may, and similarly, the Seventh Circuit disagreed with this circuit in Avista. So obviously not all judges agree. But I think in this case, as a practical matter, what we have is one 20-mile section of abandoned railroad, of which about probably 4.5 are now and have ever needed to be judicially determined because the rest of it went underwater. And this is the last pit. This is the last end before it goes underwater, this small piece of property, where these unsophisticated people thought they had dealt with this in 1996 when they hired a lawyer who took care of it for them. They had no idea. And then when this poor woman died and her estate's getting probated, suddenly there's this issue of the United States saying, well, we want this land now. These poor unsophisticated people are being taken advantage of by the government in this Johnny-come-lately thing, where they, for every prior quiet title action in this one, had said, we don't want that land. So, and it's a small bit of land that can be used for nothing else except basically these people's home. And it simply is a simple matter of fairness. It makes no sense at all for the government to simply claim it now. And when
thank
there's
you
a simple.
Well,
thank you, Your Honors.
Your comment impels me to ask, what is this land being used for? I mean, I looked at your overhead photograph. I really couldn't tell. So what's at issue here, really?
It's their home. It's where they live. It's a small parcel next to the reservoir where their houses are. So there's a couple.
Is their house in the right of way?
Is their house
in the right of way?
No. So no, the house is not in the right of way. So if you look at the opening brief, there's a blow up picture. Of where it is, their house. Part of the, you could argue that part of their houses is in the right of way, but for the most part, their houses are back enough, far away from the right of way. They're not included in it.
Well, that's why your comment confused me, because I looked at this picture a long time. So we're only talking about the right of way. What's that being used for?
Well, it's their property. I mean, they use it
That's your claim.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Property in your claim. I want to know what it's being used for.
They use it for firewood. They use it for anything that a normal person would use their rural property for. So they have some garden items there. They use it to access the rest of their land. I mean, they manage it as if it was theirs.
Oh, stop. Why do you access the rest of their land? Because as I look at this, it's not like, I mean, the right of way is on the side and the government's now saying it's part of the national forest. I don't see anything that's their land on the other side of the right of way. That's the river.
Oh, I see what you mean. What you're saying is that the land that is on the north side of the road is separate from what you would consider their property.
Well, what's that being used for? It looks like that's the riverbank.
Right, it is the riverbank. They have been managing that property as if it's been theirs for the last 100 years, basically.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued is submitted, and we're very appreciative of interesting arguments from both of you on this difficult case. With that, this case is submitted and we're adjourned for this morning's session.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
This court for this session stands adjourned. Thank you.